This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Here's this play I'm talking about. Just good hustle. What is Kevin Love doing? I
don't know. He's just batting it.
My goodness.
Yeah, just
that's hot.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am joined by Adam Murray. Adam, we're actually prepared today because we actually have a lot to get into. The last 2 weeks have been, I wouldn't say like eventful, but you start to see these games like the Clippers and the Suns and, you know, the Nuggets and the Clippers and maybe some other game with the Clippers where like things, where like you get that playoff feel, that itch where it's like, these games are starting to feel kind of important and the players are playing like it. Like, are you getting that sense watching it?
It depends. Sometimes, yes. But at the same time, you're getting really weird box scores and really weird players who are forced to play 42 minutes. And it's still the, you know, we will mention the Kevin Porter thing eventually. But, he's playing 45 minutes. Of course. Well, he's the youngest guy to do it. Yeah, he's not a starter. He's just forced to play minutes on a team that has nobody left. And,
you talk about Kevin Porter for the Rockets. He had a 50-point, 11-assist game where they beat the Bucks, but it was also a game where Giannis Antetokounmpo rolled his ankle like 45 seconds into the game and never played again.
Yeah, it was just like an exhibition match. But there's also players, as you know, from the intro who are maybe giving up, question mark?
are you talking about who you talk? I'm guessing, I'm just going to guess a couple. One of them I'm going to guess is Kevin Love.
Oh, that was just a complete, you could see he was just,
Which one were they playing? Were they playing the Miami Heat?
Was it the Raptors?
You're right. It was Toronto. So there's a made basket by Toronto. Kevin Love had hurt his, knee or wrenched it in some way, and he was trying to sort of jog it out. And you could see him motioning to, this is before the clip, the famous viral clip that we'll talk about in a second. And he's waving off saying, no, I'm okay. Let me walk it out. And he goes under the basket after the Raptors make one. He kind of just saunters and rolls it. And he not only rolled it, he rolled it where a Raptor defender was right there. He picks it off like candy from a baby. Corner three, splash, and Love doesn't even get back on defense after the turnover. And people were like, oh, look at these maxed out, spoiled players. Look at Kevin Love. He's on a bad team, so he doesn't want to try anymore. I think some people are taking out a context. Easy for me to say. Was it a bad look for Love in that one scenario? Yes, it was. He probably should have just checked out of the game. You know, but what did you think of it?
If you watch anybody, you know, just tossing the ball, they do it half-assed.
And you see a lot of walking the dog. You know, when I say that, it's when people roll the ball, and they just kind of like follow it all the way to half court because they would rather pick up the ball to start the shot clock as close to the basket as possible because they know the defender's not going to come and steal it. That's not what this was. This was literally right under their own basket.
Yeah, it was just a mental lapse, nothing more. But it just looks really bad in the end.
Love hasn't been that impressive. I mean, let's be real. I mean, he had a multitude of injuries, but even coming back, just not really much to go for. He's averaging 11 points and 6 rebounds, 2 made threes, 23 minutes. You know, he had the injured calf, you know, and then you see him looking at his, you know, he's got another lower extremity injury. So now you're thinking, man, this is, I mean, maybe he's kind of like checking himself to see if he re-injured his calf again. I'm not sure what the exact situation was, but he stayed in the game after that. But I don't know. I mean, there are a couple that, I mean, there are teams that are not trying, like the Thunder. The Thunder just had a game against the Pacers where they got blown into outer space. The final score was 152-95. Like, if that's not tanking on an exponential level, I don't know what is.
Well, then but yet they beat the Celtics, who then went out and beat the Spurs, you know, were down 30 against the Spurs and came back against the Spurs. So there's no continuity, you know, which has been just the theme of everything.
The Sacramento Kings aren't playing De'Aaron Fox right now. and they just beat the Los Angeles Lakers, who now have LeBron James and Anthony Davis back, which surprised both of us because we talked about the podcast throughout the weeks that we thought that they were saving AD for the start of the playoffs and LeBron for maybe like a couple of weeks earlier than that, which is about the same timeline as where we're at with LeBron's return. But they still lost. They, you know, LeBron was rusty. AD missed a shot that would have given him the lead, and just not a good look for the. I mean, they're in a situation where they're 36-27. The Blazers are right there, even though the Blazers have been rocky too. You know, they lost seven of their last eight for a stretch, and then they've chalked up three wins in a row. But you know, the Blazers are right there. The Mavericks jumped ahead of them. They've won six of their last seven. Like, do you think that sort of those middling teams jumping up and getting close to their record, do you think that was sort of an influence to when LeBron and AD came back?
Well, you know, I think it's your fault for kind of expecting LeBron to come back and score 30 and 20 and 10.
It's my fault that LeBron James came back and played.
You know, he every player when they come back, it takes a game or two. Especially, you know, he came back and he played 30 minutes. It wasn't only going to come back in a minute limit. You know, we'll give you, you know, 25 off the bench.
Frank Vogel said that he's not going to put a minute restriction on him because that's not who decides the minute restrictions. It's LeBron James. It really depends on what he wants to do.
Yeah, but he's not going to come back at full speed, being full power. It takes, you know, a game or two for them to get their.
Well, do I trust them more than the Blazers or the Warriors right now, or even Dallas? Yeah, I trust the Lakers more. Like, if I had to put a bet on all these teams, which most of them have between 8 and 9 games left. I think the only one that has 10 games left that's in the playoff hunt is San Antonio. Everybody else is between 8 and 9. And we can talk for a little bit as we go around the league and talk about the different playoff caliber teams about their schedules and the remaining opponents. But like for the Lakers, like I feel like they'll be okay. Like, you know, they have a lot. They do have a tough stretch. Like they play the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Blazers, the Knicks, and they finish in New Orleans against the Pelicans, like, and the Suns. So like it's not easy for them, but they do have a lot of home games. So like I do feel good about them compared to Dallas, Portland, definitely Memphis. Like I just saw Memphis lose at the buzzer against Cole Anthony and the Orlando Magic, another tanktastic team. So, you know, you almost have to just look at, like, people are looking at them slipping. There's like, oh, maybe they'll be in the play-in. I don't think, Adam, it's going to get to that point. I don't think they'll be in the 7-10 play-in scenario.
No, they're not going to be that bad. But at the same point with other teams, yeah, do we want to be in the play-in? Who's our – because, you know, we'll just say with the West first.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, well, where do we have the Lakers? Where were they going to be? The same thing with, you know, we don't want to play them in the first round. The same thing in the East. Well, do we want to go against Brooklyn in the first round? You know, it's sort of a lot of where can we fall? You know.
And also, then you have a lot of higher seeds in other years. I don't think it's necessarily the case this time. And we'll talk about that. I'll talk about why in just a second. But I want to finish this point: is that in the higher seeds in playoffs, you see a lot of them sort of gunning for a team. They look at a team in the lower seeds and they think they have a good matchup against them. Whether or not that fleshes out when they actually play in the playoffs is a different story, but it's your choice. So you'll see some teams decide, you know what, we're going to tank these last couple of games because if we do, we'll be slotted in this seed. We're likely going to play this one as the 6 seed or the 7 or the 8, and that'll and we feel much better about them versus this other team. You know, the 7-10 play-in, which was, I think, the whole point of it, other than having more games for ratings, which with higher stakes, I think that sort of helps to sort of neutralize that thought process for those higher seeds of just, let's sort of like isolate our seeds because we know who we want to play. The reason why I think it's different this year in the West is because the Jazz, the Suns, and the Nuggets are sort of in a position that they're not usually in. So I don't think they have that frame of mind where they're like, you know, I think we have a better chance against the Blazers, or we have a better chance against the Mavericks. I don't think they even care. I think they're just happy they're in the position that they're in.
Well, With those teams, it's the, you know, the hunting and hunted at the same time, because you have the specter of the Lakers and then even the Clippers, because it's, well, you know what, the Clippers can be a tough,
they're
a tough
good.
Match
they're
if they
really
show
good.
Up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with the Clippers, it's like, okay, we know we're going to go seven, and, you know, can we beat them at home in seven? Because it's going to be, you know, they're going to show up, destroy us. Then we're going to somehow eke out a quick, you know, a victory. Then they're going to destroy them. And this is going to be, there'll be no, it's purely like everybody's sort of looking ahead and trying to, like a marathon where you're, I don't want to be up front because people can come past me. I don't want to be too far behind because I can't catch up. Mm-hmm. So it's jockeying for position right now. Yeah, there are nine games to go, but with everybody a game or two apart, that doesn't really mean anything as it usually does.
Yeah, it's interesting between the Nuggets and the Clippers. I just mentioned that they had that game over the weekend. The Nuggets squeaked it out. Jokic still on an incredible run. They're actually 9-1 since Jamal Murray got hurt. I mean, you hope they don't run out of gas in the playoffs because they're sort of pushing a little harder, but they're still playing really well. Michael Porter Jr., whew, on a tear. You think he's the MIP?
No, he is not.
No? You like Christian Wood, Jeremy Grant, Malcolm Brogdon? Is there another one?
I would say Jeremy Grant would be number one, and then Christian Wood. But he got injured, so I would. Grant pulled in the whole season, and he gave really, you know, numbers that contract justifiable numbers.
Right, but you know, Porter has really stepped up, helped out the Nuggets a lot. They're right there with the Clippers. They just jumped them in the standings. Who knows? A couple of losses here because they got a really tough stretch. Denver does, where they go to LA to play the Lakers now, after beating the Clippers. Knicks at Jazz, Nets at Hornets, who just got LaMelo Ball back. So that's going to be really interesting to see where the Nuggets are at once they're finished with those remaining five games. And then they got a poo-poo platter at the end with the Wolves, the Pistons, and then the Blazers. But I'm not sure about that one. The Suns and the Jazz, I think, are kind of sealed. Like, I don't know when Donovan Mitchell's going to be back. If I had to guess, it would probably be in about a week. The Suns are on a roll. They're 17-5 in their last 22 games, and they just had three straight big-time wins against a Knicks team that had won, like, what, nine games in a row? The Clippers were on a roll when they played them, and then they beat the Jazz. Then they beat the Jazz, who don't have Mitchell right now. But I feel like those two are pretty set, while the Nuggets and Clippers are kind of, like, teetering there. And then it's that scenario where, you know, between Dallas, L.A., Portland, Memphis, San Antonio, Golden State, where things can get a little bit dicey. It's gonna be interesting. I'll say that.
We can talk about the East in a second. But I also retract my previous statement about Jeremy Grant, because since you just mentioned the Knicks, mm-hmm. I'm probably gonna guess Randall will be in the discussion as well.
Julius Randall had good numbers the year before. He averaged what, like 18-10?
But now he's averaging like 25, 24.
Yeah, I can look it up for you. But
he has become the leader of that team. So I would say between him and Jeremy Grant, because he has been the driving force in that team. That team, as we mentioned, is like, you look at the stat, like it's usual Thibodeau teams. He runs hard for a year or two, then all of a sudden he's going to. But just like, you look at the stats, it's like, okay, well, no, none of the players look like they're really.
It's kind of interesting. It's similar to what Frank Vogel went through when he was in Orlando and it didn't work and he got fired. Then he goes to the Lakers. Now, I don't think Frank Vogel is exactly Pat Riley, and neither do I think the same of Tom Thibodeau, even though I think his defensive philosophy was revolutionary in the late 2000s when he was like with the Celtics and with the Bulls. Like, he did change the defensive philosophy in the NBA for a few years, but like, you know, you can't always go by that. So, yeah, he tried to go the other route. He went against the grain in Minnesota. It didn't work out. And then I guess he's sort of going back to his regular bag of tricks in New York. And it's actually working. Like, they and just to mention about Julius Randle, 24 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 made threes, 5 free throws a game. Also first-time All-Star. So, yeah. Definitely a marked improvement.
So, but in, like, you know, the East, let's just, you know, mention their playoff jockeying position there. I don't think anybody is really afraid. It's just the how late can we get to the Nets and the Sixers? I don't think the Bucks have that fear that they did last year.
No, and I'm glad you brought up the Bucks and the Nets so close together. They actually play each other twice in a row, like, coming up. And I think that's going to be key. Like, if the Nets win those two, then it's going to get interesting because the Sixers might be jockeying to try to get back to the one. If the Bucks win, then you have three. Then you basically have a three-way dance all the way to the end to try to get that one spot. So the Bucks are, like you mentioned, that whole point about jockeying for position in the playoffs because you don't want to be, you don't want your momentum to be too like barreling too much into like trying to have the best regular season record and then flaming out. But you also don't want to be like completely ice cold going in and trying to heat it up. Like, I feel like the Bucks are perfectly working that out where they're like, you know, we're not going to put our pedal to the metal like we did the previous two seasons where we had like the best record and the best stats and all this stuff. And then we just run out of gas in the playoffs because we don't have a plan B with Giannis. If we run into a good defensive team, I feel like the Bucks are sort of treading water. Drew Holiday has actually been a godsend for them because when Giannis doesn't play or just doesn't have that mojo going, Holiday actually plays well on both ends.
Well, yeah, he's a actual true point guard who can be a playmaker. So Giannis doesn't have to be the point guard and have to everything, you know, like it was Giannis ball and then Oladipo ball. But just like, you know, let's just go to the East. Like, who do you really think is hot right now? And who do you really think is cold? Because it's really nobody. You can't say,
well, the Wizards are 12-3 in their last 15.
The Wizards, but the Wizards are a play-in game. We're not even.
They just had that close loss to the Mavericks. But the hard part for the Wizards to me is that they got five road games in a row coming up. So that's gonna be the real test. You know, I think the Bulls and the Raptors are out of it below them.
Well, the Raptors don't have the Bulls. I thought we're gonna make a push, but it doesn't appear they're gonna be doing it.
They've lost four of their last five.
Between the Hornets, the Heat, the Celtics, the Hawks. Nobody strikes fear in it. You know the Celtics will go down 20 every game. And then
if the Celtics have a player that can score 60 or 50 points at random and come back from huge deficits, yeah, I wouldn't want to play against him in the playoffs.
But then again, they disappear.
Do you know any players like that for the Celtics?
Oh, Tatum has just been insane. But like the Heat, like one day they show up and then the next day, well, you know, where I thought Tyler Hero was supposed to be like an all-star, like, you know, we won't trade Hero for Harden and Hero doesn't look that good this year.
Yeah, they also got a little bit of health going their way. Goran Dragic is playing a lot. You know, Bam Adebayo had that game winner against the Nets. So you know he's sort of in his mode. Jimmy Butler, I was looking at his numbers at him. I mean, they're still like rock solid. Like some people are thinking like you know Butler's kind of taking it easier than he did when they went to the finals. And I'm gonna tell you, you're wrong. Like 22 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 steals, and 7 free throws. Like,
well, he's doing his thing. He's not pushing the team. He's quietly getting his numbers. Everybody else is, but you know, Oladipo, as we mentioned, you know, did we mention? I don't even.
Well, no. he got a random knee injury right when he got there to Miami after the trade. He hasn't been there since. I do not know when he's coming back. They did pick up Dwayne Dedman, so that's a little bit of size that they can use along with Precious Achiuwa and then, you know, Adebayo's their all-star center. It's not the exact same team that they had the year before. I mean, some of the central cast is the same. Hero, Duncan Robinson making threes, Goran Dragic. You know, he's sort of, you know how they always say playoff Rondo? Now that he's with the Clippers, they're like, well, wait till playoff Rondo turns on. There's also, would you agree with me that there's playoff Dragic?
No, I think he's just there. They just.
But it seems like in the postseason, he starts to play a little bit better. Not like playoff Rondo level. Rajon Rondo is the kind of player now where, like, in the regular season, he's just kind of coasting it all the time. And then in the playoffs, he just turns it on.
Yeah, I can see that argument. I just don't think Dragic is one of you're comparing Rondo, who just like you said, phones it in the entire regular season. Dragic is just there. He's just quietly getting his numbers. You don't see him take plays off. You don't see him take time off. It's just like, yeah, if I'm not the guy, but you know, in the playoffs, everybody starts playing. So okay, I will start. He is the prototypical playoff push. Not the he doesn't show up in the regular season, like.
And Jimmy Butler is in pure playoff mode all year round.
Right.
Jimmy Butler just lives in playoff mode.
The other teams are like in TBD mode. Like the Hornets, they lose LaMelo Ball to a wrist injury. Then they lose Gordon Hayward. LaMelo Ball comes right back. And they're like 31 and 32, like kind of in the lower part. The Hawks, they got on a roll. Trae Young gets hurt. They lose three in a row. Trae Young is back. Like, but Bogdanovich is playing really well for them. Like, I'm not sure under Nate McMillan, the new head coach. So, like, I don't really know, like I don't have, like, a clear, you know, finger on the pulse of, like, where those two teams are. I think the Knicks are a very good team with a really good defense. I just worry about, I call it first-time-itis, where, like, the first time they're in a really tough playoff game, are they going to be, like, wide-eyed, be like, we don't know what to do here. Like, that's my worry.
Yeah, but can you really say that against, you know, we could even just go the Nets haven't played together in the playoffs. The Hawks don't know the playoffs, period. The Hornets don't know the playoffs, period. The Pacers don't know the playoffs. So the East is just the definition of not playoff ready.
That's why I said that road stretch for the Knicks is going to be huge. That's they got six in a row. Wow. And so, like, if they can come out of there 3-3, they'll be set at the four seed. Like, then it's just going to be the question of who's the five, like, who's going to play New York, and New York will have home court. And, you know, because New York fans are, what's the word to put it?
Irrational.
Yeah. But they're also irrationally excited. So, like, that crowd in MSG can kind of get going. I was watching the Pelicans play them in MSG, and there was some sauce in the building. Like, you could feel the energy of the crowd. You know, the funny part about the tanking teams, like when you watch like Cleveland and Houston and Minnesota, like, because we're so used to the doldrums of like empty seats, it actually doesn't bother me anymore during COVID. Like, when I watch them, I'm like, yeah, that's kind of how many people would be watching a Thunder game when you're 40 games under 500 in March. You know what I'm saying?
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. But, the intrigue for me is really like what happens when the Nets play the Bucks twice in a row, this week. And if the Bucks are still in it after that, are we going to see a real like race to try to get that top seed? Or are you going to see some stabilizing between 1, 2, and 3 between Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee? Maybe I'm burying the lead. Cause the Heat were like a 5 seed or a 4 seed when they eliminated Milwaukee in the bubble. But so maybe some teams below the 1 through 3 slot could make a threat. But
we'll find out.
We'll find out.
All right, we will be back after these messages. All right, the PTB and Pop Experience has tons of shows of all varieties for your listening pleasure. They have PTBN Trivia Night with Matt Souza, Greg Diener, and Mike Valente. They have Making Mount Rushmore with Steve Riddle, Ray Carcillo, and Ben Locke, where they share all their top fours of everything. Okay. The Year in Pop with Scott Criscuolo, Andy Atherton. They discuss, I don't know, usually what, 1972, 1973. That's where Scott Criscuolo pretty much lives in his mind. Am I right?
late 80s, where the year, whatever year where Georgetown was good. he is a huge Hoyas fan. But man, you talk about if you talk about something retro, it is locked in key in Scott Criscuolo's mind. Like he's got it.
He's a great listener. He has the 80s on lock. Yeah. Pop goes to the couch talking all the Marvel universe, it seems like.
Yes.
They got it was a thing on TV talking about the completely random stuff every week. You can't even keep up with it. Battlestar in the 25th century, where Sean Kidd and Scott Shiflett go through late 70s, early 80s sci-fi shows. Pop goes to the classics. Telly and T.
Do they talk about Julius Erving's first team all time, since it's all from the 70s and 60s?
Just gets older and older and older. And
right, like who was the zero team? Was it George Mikan and Ed McCauley and Bob Cousy?
Yeah, pretty much. The Peach Basket Awards.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Pop goes to the movies. Then the wrestling feed has Justin Rosero with his stuff. You got Scott Criscullo with his stuff. You got the Jenny position with all her stuff.
Yep, well, shout out to the North-South Connection.
The PTB Network has tons of variety for you to rate, listen, review, enjoy your time.
Including us.
And us.
And we're back to the second part of this episode of PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. Which episode number is this one?
Oh, this number is this 190, I believe.
Is this 190?
Now we're quizzing me on what they are.
as long as they get the episode numbers right, that's all we can't go backwards. Like, we can't run out of episodes.
Yes, with the mini episode 118 and a half.
Yeah, well,
somehow we dug it up from like 2 years ago.
Yeah, from like 2018 or 2017. Like,
okay,
People want to know if the Wizards with Bradley Beal and John Wall are going to be a title contender once John Wall signs that Supermax. That worked out great for the Wizards.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in essence, it almost kind of did, because that was a straight up swap for Russell Westbrook, and Westbrook is playing his ass off. He's averaging a triple double again in Washington.
Yeah, he has been willing them to try to do something, which is amazing because that team has zero bodies left
on
them.
He's not doing anything different. He's doing the same thing he did in Oklahoma City, the same thing he did the 1 year in Houston. You know, the thing that killed Westbrook was that he just didn't pass the playoff test when Houston played LA and they actually had to play a team that could defensively give them problems. And
what killed them was James Harden. Was, oh, I liked playing with James Harden. Let's play with him again. Oh, wait, he pouted. He didn't have the ball. Mm-hmm. So in the end, that didn't work out. But
yeah,
changing gears for a second, I guess, in this world of clickbait and clickbaiting and money for clicks. And let's just ask random people for opinions, even though we shouldn't ask for their opinions. Something very interesting popped up on my feed.
I thought after The Last Dance, we had already kind of like purged ourselves of all of the, especially during the COVID time filling phase. We were like, I thought we were past this whole who's the best, who might be the best, what list. I thought all the listomania had kind of gotten, like, we had already aired our grievances there and we had moved on, but I guess Julius Erving didn't.
Yes. For some reason, somebody asked Dr. J who his top two teams, his all-time were, and he's like, well, he doesn't have LeBron in his top 10 all-time. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, let's.
But they listed it in a scenario in which, like, who would be your starting five, right?
Yeah, your first team and second team. And it's just like, okay, you know, why are we asking Dr. J what he thinks about stuff? Okay, who's on your team? Okay, you don't have LeBron in the top 10. Old people have it. But then you look at the list, and it's just like his first team all time is Oscar Robertson, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, Bill Russell, and Will Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm. And if I had to guess right, I think the last time any of those players played an NBA game was probably in the early 1970s.
Yeah, and it's just like, okay, Russell and Chamberlain – definitely you can make arguments for. Elgin Baylor and Jerry West are your two best all time.
Now,
and then your second team.
Now, Baylor recently passed away, so rest in peace to the Big E. He was an awesome player in his time.
And then your second team is Michael Jordan is in your second team all time.
That's sacrilegious.
With Magic Bird, Karl Malone, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, really, Jordan's on your second team all time. That was just like, you know, when Chris Sims had his, oh, this is my mock draft and Justin Fields will somehow fall to 32nd. Everyone's like, yeah, this is just for clicks. Like, if Dr. J apparently isn't maybe senile now, like, why are you putting Jerry West as?
I got to say this, though. You know, Julius Erving's done a lot of analysis. He's not like Bill Russell or. I'm trying to think of a couple of other like legendary players. He's not one of those legendary players who's like turned into Gran Torino 2.0. Like, he's not one of those like get off my lawn type of legend type of people. I just think that like he's been a pretty deep thinking type of analyst for the NBA. He's worked for NBC in the past. I don't think he's trapped in the times. But when you do see like like a headline, like, you know, his all time starting five or five guys that were in their primes in the 60s. Yeah, like in the 1960s. Like, yeah, that's a little bit alarming. And then if you look at the second team, you know, like you were saying, it's Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Karl Malone, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All amazing players. I wouldn't disagree on any of those five being in the top 10. But maybe we should flip the script. Maybe those five should be in the all-time
You don't have – the story is you don't have LeBron – in the top 10, but you put Jordan on the second team. Okay, why are we listening to you now?
Mm-hmm. Why? Well, let me ask you this.
Why?
Other than LeBron, and you can add the contemporary players to this. Is there one in the 10 that you would put in there right now, like right off the top of your head, just gun to head, just
of
like
current
a Kevin
players?
Durant, a Steph Curry, even somebody like a Shaquille O'Neal, like Kobe Bryant. Like, is there one there that you would put in a first team or a second team to all?
Well,
all
for
time?
One, there's no mention of Kobe. Even mm-hmm. in this, so like you have no Jordan, Kobe, argument number two, LeBron, you know, arguably top three. So you don't have two of the three people in there. The thing I have with current players is you can't predict their. It's one of those. Well, based upon trajectory, oh yeah, they should be in there, no problem. But then all of a sudden, you know, Durant, oh yeah, he'll be a top five player all time. But then he got injured for a year, so that takes a hit on him. Curry got injured for the year, takes a little hit there. You can't predict how the later years, the only one who's really bucked the trend of the getting old has been LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
In the fact he's what 36 now, so
yeah, still. I will say he did have a notable quote after the Kings game where he said, "I will never be 100% healthy again." Did you think that was a bit of a tell where he's trying to like coax these defenses into laying off of him? Because you know how LeBron's a thinker like that, or is he being legit?
No, it's the I'm old, injuries don't heal. I, you know, the back in the, you know, the younger players, oh yeah, we're going to go out to the clubs after that. The old players, yeah, I'm going to take an ice bath and then I'm going to go in my hyperbaric chamber and rest. And that's what I think he means of the, I can't go hard every night anymore without having the wear and tear and feeling the wear and tear afterwards.
Right.
Like, you know, look at how Vince Carter changed his career from that. I'm the dunker. I'm everything. I'm going to run around. All of a sudden, you know what? I'm going to be a jump shooter now. Yeah. I want to be very good at jump shooting and, you know, getting open and becoming the Ray Allen.
That is the miracle to me so far of Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant tore his Achilles tendon. I mean, when Kobe Bryant had it happen, he was never the same. He was older at that point, but that effectively ended his career. Isaiah Thomas, it actually ended his career. You know, like people do not come back from that, especially Hall of Fame caliber players. Durant bounced back almost without a misstep to me, you know, that's so I'm thankful for that. Chris Paul's another guy that really never ran into any injuries. Kawhi Leonard had that one year where he missed, but some people think that he was just laying low because he wanted to get out of San Antonio. So that's another part where I don't think people dealt with that as much in the earlier years. You didn't have scenarios where players were like, taking entire years off because they didn't want to play for their team. Like, I just don't think that was something that was a possibility. I mean, look, Michael Jordan almost missed an entire season, like his second year. You know, this isn't like if we're going to be comparing injury time, I mean, every player has missed a multitude of games due to injury. LeBron is just one of the rare ones that almost never does it.
Yeah, but everyone else, it's also with Durant, just as I have half sentences for all of these, technology has changed completely. Back in the day, you met, you know, Isaiah Thomas. Oh yeah. You know, hey, walk to the locker room. We'll take a look at it. Now, you know, Kevin Durant, all of a sudden his foot's in a hype, you know, in a air pressure cast.
If Bill Walton was around with today's medical procedures, I think he would have had a longer career, you know. Grant Hill, the same. Like, I think they would have been able to make something of their injuries and been able to at least play around it and stay at an elite level. Whereas they just kept re-injuring the same injuries over and over again to the point that they were complete eyesores and they just couldn't get past it and their playing level dropped.
Well, think of it back, like, let's just say, you know, 20 years ago, in the 2000s, a torn ACL was your career. You were never coming back from that. Now it's just like, oh, he's going to be out for a year. We expect to see him back to full speed, back to normal health. His leg will be just as good, if not better than before.
Right, right.
Like, you know, you had mentioned Michael Porter Jr. If he were around in the late 90s, he wouldn't be in the NBA right now with all his ACL tears. And
yeah, everything. They literally sat on him for a year. You know, I call it the Willis McGahee treatment. McGahee was an NFL running back who messed up his knee really bad in the national championship game. And the Bills drafted him, but they did it knowing that he wasn't going to play for an entire year. You know, the Sixers, I don't think they did that on purpose with Embiid and Simmons. Like, Simmons got hurt in training camp, but they had the mind frame, the frame of mind of, like, you know.
No, Embiid, they knew they were taking the year off.
Well, he got injured in the workout. He broke his foot in the workout. Then he
and they said, we, you know, you can come back in the half season. Like, no, just take the whole year off. We'll redshirt you. Simmons was just the, was it the summer league or practice? Or it was right in the beginning.
But based on Julius Erving's, like, criteria, like, a player like Joel Embiid, like, say Embiid has, like, 9 or 8 more great seasons. In his frame of mind, he'll never, that Joel Embiid will never be as great as, like, a Shaquille O'Neal or an Hakeem Olajuwon, all amazing players. And I don't know if that's fair, because it's just the whole nature of the game is different. But you also got to look at it this way, though. You got to look at it.
He has to be, like, the NBA MVP for the next 10 years in order to be on that that level.
That's understandable. You know, will he be at that point? I would say no. You know, like, it's just there. And the other thing is, too, like I was just about to say, the league is so good now. Like, and some people tried to make this argument in the 80s, like, oh, there were less teams, so the teams were more loaded. Well, maybe that is the case at the top. But this idea of, like, this idea that Irving has of, like, well, LeBron was the first one to start super teams. Let me be clear. Give me those five players again. The starting five in the first team. According to Julius Erving.
His starting five was Jerry West, Oscar Robertson, Elgin Baylor, Bill Russell, and Wilt Chamberlain.
Okay. Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, and Wilt Chamberlain all played together with the Lakers. And they actually lost to the Celtics when they all played together. And Bill Russell. Guess what? Oscar Robertson didn't win an NBA championship until he played with, guess who? Julius Erving's all-time second teamer, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, like, please stop with the notion of, like, LeBron introduced the super teams. The super teams were always around.
No, it's the just, super teams were around. LeBron introduced the let's play together.
The super microwave team. Theory of super teams. Like, let's not try to cultivate, like instead of trying to build a culture, because coaches love talking about that, the culture of a great team, let's just instantly make one because of how good we are if we get enough good players together.
That's it. You know, hey, I want to
like
play
that,
with you.
I understand that, but it's not, like, I just can't go with Irving's philosophy on that one. Like, we need to negate LeBron's legacy because he joined other clubs. No. Like, every player, even Jordan, had Scottie Pippen. Like,
yeah, but there are super teams. But, like, look at the Celtics with Garnett and
Ray Allen.
Yeah, that was formed by the GM. The Celtics before that with Larry Bird and Kevin McHale. Yeah, that was, you know, through trading and it wasn't let's play together. That's, I think, a lot of the old time guys was, no, you have your team, you play with your team forever. You're a Detroit Piston for life. You're, you know, a Laker for life. It's not like, hey, you want to go somewhere and do something together.
Let me ask you this. Now that he's tied Larry Bird in the all time single game scoring list as a Celtic, is Jason Tatum as good as Larry Bird?
See, no, that's because Jason Tatum's, you know, his Bird has you look at greatness through the long longevity.
But you say Jason Tatum hasn't built his legacy yet? I mean, that's saying something.
Well, that's like, you listen to NFL, everyone's like, oh, Mahomes.
I'm being facetious. I'm trying
Mahomes is going to be the greatest QB of all time. Like, no, he can fall off immediately. He could get injured. Anything could happen to any of these players. Like Tatum, until Tatum's like, I want to be traded, he will be there forever or until he starts sucking.
His game is, I mean, his step back hesitation game is just fucking lethal. Talking about Tatum. I mean, it is like when he gets his, when his three is going, it is just disgusting how many points he can score.
He is on it. It's just, that's just one of the fleecings of all time. A first round pick. Well,
the other problem that happened in that game that people like, first of all, the Spurs were up 32 at a point in that game. So now you're like, now you're basically, you feel like you're betting on how, like you're on, you have house money. Now you're like, well, we're probably not going to win this game. So let's just like, let's just give the ball to Tatum and see what happens. The other thing that happened is that Jaylen Brown shot like 5 for 24. So like when your other superstar player isn't gotten go, doesn't have it going, Kemba Walker's out. Well, yeah, just give the ball to Tatum a bunch of times. Just like what happened with the Rockets with Kevin Porter Jr. And you know, there's been a couple of other games like that with other random players where if they're hot and they can just keep shooting threes, yeah, they might get to 50 points.
That's the Lou Williams syndrome. Like, okay, Lou, go ahead. Go. Oh, he scored, you know, 6 for 8 from three. All of a sudden, the dynamic changes. But
it's when you do that multiple times for like consecutive games, like Steph Curry did in April. That's when you're in greatness mode. That's when you're like, all right, this is not like a hot streak or a guy who's just in his prime for a month. This is an all-time great player who just dominates his opponent. That's where Curry's at. Curry is a guy who by the end of his career might be in that top 10 area.
He easily could, but what say he falls off Kobe style? And what say, you know, well, you know, even I'll go more, a little more modern, John Wall style, where you're getting your points, but your usage goes way down. You know, is he going to still be in the thing if the tail end of your career, you just completely fall off the cliff?
The field goal percentage is so high, I don't think he'll ever get to that point. He'll be able to just score inside by getting through the lane.
Not no. When you're older, he won't have that speed or cut or elusiveness anymore.
He'll do that bully ball stuff.
Yeah, that'll work. So, but,
we do have to say farewell to LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, he was about a 5-time All Star. He had a terrific career. They found a heart irregularity when after he had just joined the Nets after being waived by the San Antonio Spurs, and he called it a career. Real, I mean, what's your kind of general reflection on LaMarcus Aldridge as a player?
I believe we made reference to his sudden retirement last episode, or we've mentioned it. It's just he was one of those guys where, you know, you could say who's hot, who's big, who's an all-star. Yeah, he was an all-star, but he wasn't going to bring anybody over the hump. He wasn't, you know, he was great for
San Antonio thought he would be. You know.
San Antonio thought, like, you know, Paul George. Like, yeah, you're going to get your numbers, but you're a max player. But, you know, you're just a good player on a good team. You're an all-star player on a good team. You're not gonna make it to the finals. You're not going to with, you know, you and by yourself in the system. So it's one of those, like, you know, was it better leaving Portland? Would he have been?
That's a good question. I would say that it was about the same. Like, because he left Portland when Damian Lillard was in his second year, but by year two, Damian Lillard was like a superstar who made a deep three to like clinch a playoff series. Like he was already like at that point pretty early. I mean, Lillard was he's in such rarefied air as a great player to me.
Yeah, but that would have also stifled McCollum. He wouldn't have been the player. McCollum.
So eventually Aldridge leaves. He goes to San Antonio to be like Tim Duncan's, like the next Tim Duncan, I guess you could say. But Kawhi Leonard had ascended as the top guy. So there was sort of this push and pull where Kawhi was getting most of the possessions, and Aldridge's numbers started to sink, and people thought that Aldridge was a disappointment being signed there and he didn't bring him to the promised land. Like, I think maybe Aldridge was hoping that he could have been a bigger influence on the teams that he played for than he actually was. Like I'm not saying that as an insult to his career. I thought that he had a terrific career. He was like a better version of David West. He was like a mid-range nightmare. Like if he got isolation from about 10 to 12 feet away, it was a jump shot going in. Like he was a really good rebounder too. He just wasn't the guy that could get you over the top. He wasn't like Moses Malone was for the Sixers when he got there. He wasn't like Anthony Davis when he got to the Lakers. He wasn't the missing piece.
No, he wasn't the missing piece. He wasn't. I don't know how many other ways to say it. It's just good player, good team. But what, you know, it's in the end of the day,
not a highlight reel either. You? Yeah, he wasn't a highlight reel either.
You know, I don't know what you like. Who would you compare him to?
The one I did say is that he was like a taller, stronger version of David West. Like, I mean,
but that's sort of an insult.
David West, look, he was a New Orleans Hornet. He was a really good player for a while.
He was a good player, but he wasn't really.
If on the spot, he was a poor man's Tim Duncan. He was a poor man's Tim Duncan. Not as good defensively either, but that's where I would say that's how I would say about LaMarcus Aldridge.
What would you? I want to say Chris Bosh.
Okay, Chris Bosh was.
But I meant the type of player. Chris Bosh needed to get other people around. Like if Chris Bosh had stayed in Toronto, he would have been LaMarcus Aldridge.
Okay, that's fair to say.
That's what I wanted to say. Like I kept like dancing. I'm like, should I go for it?
And also, it also kind of like you also question like the mortality of like the NBA caucus. Like you start looking at it and you're thinking, oh my God, LaMarcus Aldridge is old enough to retire now. Like you get so lost into how many good players are in the NBA. You just assume that like in 2K mode that they're all going to be good always. And that's not the case. Like I was looking through some of the All-Star rosters and cause we were talking about Aldridge who had been in the All-Star game. Blake Griffin is another one who obviously took some tumbles after injuries and now he's a fill-in for the Nets. But I'll give you a couple of names. You just kind of tell me like Carmelo Anthony, John Wall, Paul Millsap, the aforementioned Kevin Love, Kemba Walker. I know you have a lot to say about him. Marc Gasol, DeMarcus Cousins, Al Horford, Jeff Teague, Isaiah Thomas, Andre Drummond, and Victor Oladipo. Like, do you feel like any of those? Do you think that those guys are sort of at the downturn slope of their careers?
Well, Carmelo is at the end of his career. He's been there for Portland.
Like, he was blackballed pretty much. Like nobody wanted him.
Nobody wanted him because he kept saying I want to be that guy, and finally Portland was like, no, don't try. And then he's became finally content in his role and he's been, you know, welcomed there. But it was just the no, I don't, you know, he was still trying to be that me first player.
Wall's injury is really, I mean, that was the killer. I mean, because this is a guy who built his whole game on speed and he still has a little bit of juice left when he goes playing for the Rockets, but like he is not what he was with the Wizards. I mean, let's be serious.
No, they're all starting to fall. And Carmelo Anthony, that's the one I'm gonna. Because Kemba Walker, he wasn't. You know, technically being an All Star doesn't mean you're.
I hate to pick on Walker, but he was an All Star a couple times in Charlotte, and he was an All Star the year before with Boston. His numbers are so bad.
He's alarming. Not good at all. But just like Carmelo, it's one of those things. Like, okay, the last 4 years of your career, you know, you're putting up paltry numbers. You can't be that guy you were anymore. And does it because you keep grinding it out? How does that affect your legacy? Or does that make you fall from the top 10 to top 15 because the last few years were what they were?
Well, not only that, the players that are kind of in that level, when they fall, like they fall drastically. Like some of these tumbles in terms of efficiency and you know, and win shares, like these guys, like they go from like, man, this guy is like the star player of his team. They go to like by once they get moved, like Melo did when he went to the Thunder, or you know, Blake Griffin when he went to Detroit, like they completely fall apart. Like not all the time. Al Horford bounced from Atlanta to Boston. And then he fell off in Philadelphia, but like he was still pretty good, you know?
Well, you knew it was falling off for him. You knew he was slowing down. You knew he had lost a step and it was just a matter of time. But I guess in the end we could say, yeah, it is a long way to be to the top of the hill, but it is a super quick and a super fast fall off that cliff.
But you can still see the contributions. Like, Blake Griffin will be important for Brooklyn because they don't have anyone after Joe Harris. Like, that's really it. You know, I don't know if they thought Aldridge would be that kind of a player. We'll never know. Melo plays a lot for Portland, and Paul Millsap is a bench guy for Denver now, and I think he's sort of accepted that role. I mean, there are guys, even Boogie Cousins wound up with the Clippers roster. Like, it's not over. It's not over for these guys.
Yeah, but the times are changing. It's not over, but it's over now.
Right, and so is this episode. This episode is over now. All right.
For Andrew Reich, I'm Adam Murray. Have a good one.